You are listening to Phil Hewlett and Friends. I'm Phil Hewlett. I thank you for tuning in. This is the talk show where you get nothing but fun, informative, sometimes unexpected conversation about the stories you care about. You'll hear from the experts, authors, and others. And we hope to put a little smile on your face along the way. On today's show, did Congress sell your cyber privacy down the river? Or up the river? You'll hear from an activist who says yes, and will explain what's in the Cybersecurity Information Sharing Act that you should be very, very scared about. Hey, nothing is new under the sun. That's why you'll hear from an author who says you need to steal other people's ideas, just like the artists do. Let's meet the friends. He's offering free refills today. Say hello to Chris Martin.
A new warning says that a beverage many of us consume every day could be killing us.
Stay alive for the duration of the program. And then when you listen to this show on iTunes, we thank you in advance for staying alive and leaving a comment and a five-star review. You're helping the program by doing that because the folks over at iTunes read your comments. They notice your five-star reviews. And oh, by the way, in all deference to the good people at iTunes, coming soon, because we've been approved, just waiting for it to happen, podcasts will be available on Google Play. So if you listen to your music there, there will be a podcast section soon, and we'll be one of the first programs available there. So we hope you'll be aware of that, those of you who are Android Google types.
Yet another platform. How many is that now? That's at least a dozen platforms.
No, right? I think we're closer to 30.
Wow.
Yeah.
Who even knew there was that many out there? What a diverse playing field it is.
I mean, when you're in Europe, nobody's talking about Google or iTunes. They're talking about something called Miro.
Oh, really? I've never even heard of that.
We're on Miro.
No kidding. Miro.
Yeah. Miro.
Well, there you go.
M-I-R-O. It's one of the biggest ones out there.
Wow. But yeah, when I went to China, I actually learned about their social networking site that I can't remember the name of right now, but it is the Chinese Facebook, basically, sort of. It also doubles as a dating app and gets people hooked up together.
But I bet there are a lot of people using it.
Yeah, billions, actually.
Yeah, of course. Of course. You know, billions will be a recurring theme on today's program. We'll see how that goes. But now, what are we consuming beverage-wise that could be bad for our health?
Okay, let me start out with a little bit of description. Researchers followed the habits of 42,000 Swedish men over 12 years and found that those who drank at least two sugary drinks, like soda pop, a day, had a 23% higher risk of going into heart failure. This was published by the British Medical Journal yesterday.
Would that include a lingonberry soda pop?
I'm going to say yes, because of the amount of sugar in it. And they did qualify sugary drinks by having so many milligrams. I don't have that stat in front of me. But
would it be soda in every case? Maybe.
Soda was the predominant group of drinks that they classified.
Yeah.
They really sort of quantified it down to soda. Because I'm sure it could be Kool-Aid if you pump enough sugar into it.
By anybody's research standards, 42,000 is a large sample.
It is.
But they're all Swedish dudes.
Right. Well, what does that mean? Aren't we all sort of Swedish descendants, or at least a majority of us?
A lot of us are,
yeah.
Perhaps.
But at least we come from that, you know, yeah. This area was populated by that part of the country.
I will tell you, I very rarely crack a soda open at home, or anything sweet for that matter. Every now and then I'll have a glass of juice. But I'm drinking water most of the time. But when I go to a restaurant or a fast food place, okay, restaurant, if I'm not having a beer, or I'm having an iced tea, but I'm not adding any sugar to it. But if I'm not having an iced tea, or I'm at a fast food joint, it's a small soda, which I refill 3 to 4 times.
That's overconsumption.
Is it?
Phil, yes.
Well, should there be somebody in the lobby trying to ankle tackle me before I get to the refill center?
That's up to you.
Yeah.
It's your choice on what you want to put into your body.
Of course it is.
The information is out there for you to either absorb or bypass.
Now, what did we learn again from the Swedish guys? How many of those small soda pop refills at the all-you-can-drink soda fountain do I need in a week to qualify as I'm killing myself?
14.
14 refills?
14 times. You would have 14 in a week. You asked me how many it would take in a week.
Not happening for me.
So they classified the increased risk of heart failure by having at least two or more sugary drinks a day. They say that too much sugar reduces your heart's ability to pump adequate blood and oxygen to support your body, and then the heart fails. And now what this really leads to is the fact that they're saying with medical advancements, more people are living long after heart attacks. So take a step, reduce your risks, cut down your sugary drink intake, and you will live a less painful life later on.
And get a glass of water to wash down your meatballs, for goodness sakes.
That's it.
You know who I think of? I think of the guy who's walking across the street on a hot, hot, hot day, and he's got one of those 2-liter Pepsis under his arm, you know, and he's taking a swig of that every time he needs a little hydration.
Yeah.
That's not hydration, is it?
No, his heart is struggling to make sure to pump blood to all his major arteries in that case, because soda is actually a diuretic. It depletes water from your system.
Yeah, but it's tasty, though.
Oh, it tastes great. And by the way, everything in moderation. I mean, they're saying 2 sodas a day. That seems to be a lot, right? I mean, that's a lot of sugar to put in your system.
Yeah. And I think soda intake goes down in America this week because of all the kids who got Smarties and other sugar powdered candies for Halloween, because they're going to want to pour them into those 2-liter bottles of Coke and Pepsi and turn them into rockets.
I'm sure they could do a report on the effect of the massive amounts of candy that children are eating all over the country over the next month due to Halloween as well.
Month? Come on. It'll be gone in a week.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Just
I know it
binge.
Didn't last long in my house.
Just binge. I am so pleased our doorbell only rang 10 times. We have so much extra candy. I should have brought some in today. But no, why do I do that? You have extra candy too, right? You can't buy the right amount of candy. They only have the ginormous and mostly ginormous bag sizes when you go to the supermarket.
Right, and everybody overbuys. And I think that the actual door-to-door trick-or-treating might have been down a little bit this year. I'm not totally sure, but just my perspective on it based on what I saw, you know, driving around the neighborhoods, didn't seem like quite as many trick-or-treaters. But different neighborhoods might have been more.
Looking up and down at my street, all the porch lights were off, except ours.
That's the other thing. I think there's more people turned off by the holiday, and they say, you know what? We're just going to go ahead and kill all the lights, and if any kids come up to the lawn, we're going to let the dog loose on them.
I might turn off the light next year if I didn't like the goofing around with the house so much and making it creepy and coming up with music and all that sort of thing. But I might turn off the light next year because the kids would come up to the door, and they feel or they act so entitled. Like, give me all the Snickers. Excuse me, give me your shoes. You know?
Hey, mister, candy in the bag. You know the drill. Let's do this. Then they just stick out their pillowcase.
Yeah. And some of the kids try to just reach their hand into the bowl and take as much as they want. And I want to say, okay, can I just check real quick? Anybody here have eggs on you? Or anybody here have
toilet paper?
Paper bags of dog poo? Anybody with that kind of stuff on you at the moment? Can I just double check? No? Nobody's got that? Get out of here! What's the matter with you?
Well,
trick or treat.
There'd be something wrong with them if they admitted to that. Yes, actually, I do have a little bag of dog poo I was going to light on fire as soon as you shut the door.
You ever do that?
Sure, you'll get
a
king size.
Were you a prankster?
I didn't do that, but I have egged a couple of houses when I was younger, and we did a lot of ding-dong ditching. We did a lot of that around town. You know, it'd be like midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning. What a jerky thing to do, but you're 12 years old, you snuck out the window, and you're going to go cause some havoc.
And if I'm the homeowner who says, get out of here, you kids, then retribution is coming, right?
Well, we had a guy chase us down the street with a Louisville Slugger one time. Luckily, we were fast little buggers, because if he'd have caught us, I'm pretty sure he'd have just caught and fist us right in the back of the head.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What was that phrase you used?
I heard it on a CD one time, actually an Adam Sandler CD.
Caught and fist us?
Caught and fisk you with a Louisville Slugger. That's Tollbooth Willie. Never heard of Tollbooth Willie?
No.
$1.25, sir.
Oh, gosh. All right, we spent the whole first segment talking about something. And from Halloween to your birthday, and if you go to a restaurant, I guarantee for the foreseeable future, the waiters and waitresses, the food servers, the bus boys and girls, the cooks, the chefs, the host and hostesses, the managers, everybody will be in a state of confusion when you walk in there and say it's your birthday. I'll explain why next here on Phil Hewlett and Friends. I start
again. Monday, November 9th at 6 p.m. in a very rare Southern California appearance, Melodyne at Portsacall Waterfront Dining. For ticket information, call 310-833-3553.
Here's a great idea for your next outing. A cruise of the L.A. Harbor on a Spirit Cruises yacht. Whether you have a large party, a company outing, wedding reception, a reunion, or you need the perfect setting for a romantic evening, Spirit Cruises offers everything you need to relax and enjoy your time on the water. For a limited time, enjoy Sunday brunch at Portsacall Waterfront Dining right next door, and the first Spirit Cruises Harbor Cruise of the day is free. For more information, call 310-548-8080 or visit spiritmarine.com.
So you go into a restaurant and it's your birthday and you tell the waitress or the waiter or the host or the hostess or whoever it is.
It's my wife's birthday over here. You guys going to do anything special?
Well, yeah, sure. We'll bring her out a cake and we'll sing. We'll sing for her. So, but they don't know what to sing anymore. And it seems to me like a month ago or so, it was clear that, okay, it's a free-for-all. Go ahead and sing happy birthday. A judge said happy birthday is fair game. It's public domain. And Chris, that's still the case, isn't it?
It is not. That is not true. No, what? Of course not. Well, the one thing we need to remember is that, first of all, any company that has something like that overturned when they own it in copyright does get an opportunity to appeal the process,
yeah,
or the decision before it actually becomes enacted. Now, this whole thing's a little bit muddy, but the happy birthday song becoming public domain is still technically in court. They're waiting for a judge to rule against Warner Music, who owns the song, who, by the way, paid $15 million for the rights to the song back in 1988.
How do you make money off of that? Do they troll up and down city neighborhoods trying to look for birthday parties? And do they listen from the front yard and then knock on the door right when you're halfway done with the song and say, excuse me, that'll cost you $5,000 right there?
It's something like that. There is a part of that when you use the happy birthday song for major events that they'd be keyed into. But also, what do we in radio pay for all the time to play copyrighted music?
Yeah, music license rights.
Music license fees, rights. So yeah, it's part of that. They get a chunk of every one of those music license fees that radio stations pay in order to be able to play licensed music.
But how about on this program? Let's say it's your birthday and around the room we all sing it. We bring you out a cupcake with a candle on it, and then it gets posted to podcast, and the video gets posted to YouTube and Facebook and all these different places, and all of a sudden the song is available publicly, and we didn't necessarily pay an additional fee for that.
You could be sued, but it would be for a very nominal, very small fee.
5 cents, 50 cents?
Who knows what the fee is, but it would probably be somewhere in the maximum hundreds of dollars range,
okay,
but I would imagine.
But where this stands now is that it's under appeal because we were celebrating and singing wildly amongst ourselves when we heard the news that Happy Birthday was now a public domain. So Warner Chappell, is that what it is?
Well, an appeal is one way of putting the fact that Warner's filed a document claiming why they should retain their copyright rights. And then the company that's suing them has to respond to that document. That company, by the way, is a documentary group that were doing a film on the song, and they claimed that the song that they're doing the documentary on should be public domain. They were keyed on to this, by the way, when Warner charged them $1,500 to use the Happy Birthday song in the Happy Birthday documentary.
Yeah. So instead, you know what the judge should do to the Warner people when he does his ruling? He should sing, "Happy, happy birthday from all of us to you. Happy, happy birthday from okay.
You know,
happy birthday." That's
it's
what
like
you get
this,
at, the
when you're at the restaurant,
right?
Happy, happy birthday. Happy birthday to you. Happy, happy birthday. Da-da-da-da-da. Don't remember the last words.
Yeah, see,
but
that's
they clap. They all clap like maniacs.
It's another version of it. And the other version is, okay, happy birthday.
The song is actually a takeoff from a 1893 ditty that goes a little something like this. Good morning to you. Good morning to you. Good morning, dear children. Wait, I just screwed that up.
Yeah.
Good morning to you. Good morning to you. Good morning, dear children. Good morning to all.
Wow.
Riveting, isn't it?
It is. It is. Now, while we're talking about lawsuits, you know, more and more people, I mean, at the hockey games, you know, the Fox Sports, the Prime Ticket, all those guys, they don't use $50,000 video cameras anymore. They use those little GoPros. You know what those are? the ones that people put on their helmet when they go skydiving, and you know, all the extreme sports videos that you see out there, they're using those little GoPros. They're the size of like a half a playing card.
Right. A lot of people stick them on their dashboards so they can film whatever's happening in front of them while they're driving.
In some cases, if you want to spend the extra $50, 4K video.
Yeah.
And they store all that video on a card, and then you can transfer it, edit it, and you've got something quality there.
Mm-hmm.
They're in court now. Why?
GoPro is in court. They're going to be going to court. Polaroid actually is suing GoPro. You remember Polaroid film?
Yeah, I thought they just got out of the biz.
No, they're still in the biz. They still make cameras. They actually make video cameras. Although Polaroid became popular because back in the day they made the first instant picture camera.
Yep.
Am I right about that, Mike?
Had one.
Yeah. So you would actually, you'd take the picture and then you'd hear, and it would eject a small photo, you know, 4 inches by 6 inches, something like that, and you'd wave it in the air. So
or if you had the one that we had a Polaroid Swinger. Don't know if you knew about those, but it had this little thing, looked like a chapstick, and it was a photo accelerator, and you'd rub it on the film, and it would turn pink, and then it would turn blue, and then all the colors would turn out, and they'd be vivid, and then you'd have your little Polaroid.
Yeah, and it was great. It was very novel at the time, but we moved past it quickly once digital imagery became available to us.
Yeah.
But Polaroid is claiming that the new cube shape GoPro Hero 4 is a direct ripoff of the Polaroid Cube, which was launched months earlier. GoPro reps say that their patent timeline will prove that they were working on the product long before the Polaroid Cube was released, but it is coming at a bad time since GoPro just had a poor third quarter earnings report where they had to drop the price of the Cube, this Hero that we're talking about, 25% just to raise sales, and GoPro stock dropped a few percent right after this lawsuit was issued.
But I think they're going to be okay, so let's hope their stock drops some more, and then you get in when it's low and just hang on to it.
That's it.
Because, come on, it's Polaroid.
Put that one on your stock ticker.
Is anybody buying Polaroid anymore? I don't think so.
It seems like they might make some pretty good cameras. I don't know.
You watch The Voice?
Occasionally. Very rarely.
Not a fan of the singing contests?
It's all right. I've oversaturated. The market's oversaturated with them.
Yeah. I don't know. It kind of puts American Idol to shame.
It does now.
As far as the talent is concerned.
Mm-hmm.
Because the singers are all good.
I agree.
And they get all the bad singers out of there before they actually do the show. So they don't focus on, you know how on American Idol, they'll have like a whole week of just bad singers for our entertainment pleasure.
Right.
But on this show, it's all about finding real marketable singers.
Well, and they have 4 real viable talents that are drawing in more talent, I think, than
Blake
American
Shelton,
Idol's able to do.
Gwen Stefani.
Yeah.
And
Adam Levine.
Adam Levine from Maroon 5. And,
right.
And
Pharrell.
Yeah, and he's about as big as it gets when it comes
Pharrell.
To music.
Pharrell.
Yeah. Now, the aforementioned Stefani and Blake Shelton are still trying to deny that they're enjoying horizontal refreshments, shall we say, together. But the
hope that's not soda pop.
The evidence is mounting, pun intended. They were both at Jared Leto's Halloween party Friday night, and they left together. Were they sharing an Uber? I don't know. They left together in the same car, though. We can confirm that. And supposedly, they were holding hands.
Oh.
Now, was either of them tipsy and needed some guidance as to not fall from the effects of alcohol?
Possible. They're probably good friends at this point, too, after doing a show together a couple of times.
They noticed somebody with a camera and stopped holding hands before the photographer could catch them in the act. E! Online, however, did get blurry pictures of them holding each other at a party thrown by Adam Levine and the band Maroon 5. Both of them are going through divorces. Blake with Miranda Lambert, who's a popular singer in her own right, and Gwen with Gavin Rossdale, who will forever live off the royalties of one song he wrote in the 1980s. 2 songs. We'll give him that? Will we grant him 2 songs? Okay.
Yeah. 2.5.
By the way, here's a hint. If you want to detune, is that what the guitar players call it? Detune your guitar. You can play every song from Gavin Rossdale's repertoire from the band Bush. If you don't have to know how to play guitar, and then you just put your finger across the fretboard and you can play the songs.
And then you can call yourself a machine head.
Exactly.
They're on the rebound, though, like you said, Phil, and yeah. I don't think you can put too much stock into a couple of single people recently divorced holding hands.
Who do you think's older, Blake Shelton or Gwen Stefani?
Blake Shelton is my guess.
He's 39. She's 46.
Ooh, wow. She is holding together really well for 46.
Cleans up good, huh?
Wow. Yeah, like a new penny.
Yeah.
That is impressive.
Yeah. How about that, huh?
Good for her.
Celebrity stuff. I have one more celebrity story for you. This is for an older generation. You know who Tom Jones is?
Tom Jones, yeah.
What's up, Pussycat?
Yeah.
Whoa, that song, all right, and a bunch of others that maybe you may or may not remember. Tom Jones says that people have accused him of being black and just passing as white, mostly because of his thick, curly hair and the fact that his skin has, at times, looked darker because he tans so easily. Now he wants to get to the bottom of it once and for all. In a new interview, he said, quote, "A lot of people still think I'm black. They asked my mom if she had any black blood, and she said she didn't know. So he's going to have a DNA test to find out." Tom's mother was Welsh and English, and his father British. Tom did have black hair back in the day, but he's 75 now, so it's all white.
The most amazing part about that is neither of those two had any Swedish in them.
That's true.
We all did.
So maybe there isn't a whole lot of soda drinking going on.
Interesting.
Does that make any sense from a research standpoint?
I've seen Tom Jones before. I can understand where that confusion would happen.
Yeah. How's your privacy on the internet? Are the feds digging into your junk?
Probably.
Well, apparently Congress thinks that's okay. And a lot of civil libertarians and others are up in arms about something called the Cyber Security Information Sharing Act, which the U.S. Senate passed last week and is headed for the president's desk. Will he sign it? And why should we be worried and very concerned about it? An activist joins us next here on Phil Hewlett and Friends. Last week, the U.S. Senate passed the Cyber Security Information Sharing Act, or CISA, which in a nutshell clarifies the law as it applies to cybersecurity. But consumer groups and civil libertarians, others as well, are crying foul, saying there should be a bunch of amendments attached to this that would protect consumer privacy, adding that this isn't a cybersecurity act, it's a surveillance bill. Alex Matthews is the national chair of an organization called Restore the Fourth. Their website is restorethefourth.com. It's the number four in there with the TH after it. We'll add that to the links page in a bit. And Mr. Matthews joins us live now. Hello, sir. How are you today?
Hi. How are you doing?
Doing well, even better now that you're here. Now, what's in CISA?
CISA is really a very simple proposition. If you are a tech company, then CISA absolves you from liability if you violate your privacy policy by sharing your data with the government. So all of these privacy policies that you click through and you sign up for and that you don't read, or that I don't read, I know I don't, they are presumptively invalid if CISA becomes law.
Huh.
If you're the intelligence community, CISA is also very simple. It allows companies to share with you the people's personal data that is nominally associated with some sort of cybersecurity threat. And there are very few limitations in the bill as it stands as to what kind of thing they can share. And that means you're getting a whole flood of extra data, which you can then search on using the databases you already have. And it's terrific. So to the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, it's terrific. To the Intelligence Committee, it's terrific. To the rest of us, not so much.
To the technology companies, who no doubt don't want to upset the regulators in federal government, they would probably be more than happy to hand over information to the government if asked. But are they clearly putting up any resistance to this? And is there any technology company that we should tip our hat to that is saying, no, we're going to keep all your information private?
I think that when this discussion started off, tech companies were focusing more on what their legal departments were saying to them, which is basically, this absolves you of liability. This is great. But as time has gone on and as public pressure has increased, more and more tech companies have come out against this, of which the biggest name is Apple. So if I'm going to tip my hat to anybody, it should be them for saying, no, actually, it's important to us to protect user privacy. This is not something that we believe is a good idea.
You talk about the awareness rising and opposition to this, but the fact remains the U.S. Senate signed this, and it may get signed into law by the president. And so with the opposition, I don't know how vocal it was while the senators were caucusing the content of this legislation. How in the world did it hit the floor the way it did, and how in the world did lawmakers vote the way they did?
Well, the scale of the opposition to it was substantial, and there were millions of communications via email, via phone call, and even by fax to get Congress to understand that CISA and the equivalent cybersecurity bills in the House were not a good idea. The reason why this has not secured a majority against the bill in the Senate is that the interests that I'm talking about, the intelligence community and the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, are very powerful and have a very strong voice. And we can see that we changed some votes, but we can see also that we were not able to get to a point where we were able to change the position of a majority of senators.
When did the U.S. Chamber of Commerce cease being a friend of the consumer?
Well, I don't think that the U.S. Chamber is really oriented towards the consumer. I'm not talking here about your neighborhood Chamber of Commerce folks who are Main Street businesses and who they're pretty willing to protect your privacy and they see their customers face to face. But the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, their national lobbying group, is really a front for very large companies and does simply what would be good for them. And I don't think it was a complicated discussion in their minds. I think it was that this takes away our liability and therefore we're for it.
I don't think
they were looking at the deeper ramifications of the surveillance side.
Where does CISA stand now? Is it in the Oval Office in a stack of laws waiting to be signed? And if it is the president inclined to sign it?
Where CISA stands is the Senate has passed it. There are different cybersecurity bills that the House has passed. So there now needs to be a conference between the House and Senate.
Resolution.
For them to come up with something consistent.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Whatever they come up with goes back to the House and Senate to be voted on. And then when there's a consistent bill that has been passed by both houses, then it goes to the president's desk.
Right. Okay. So call your congressman or woman and express your concerns about this. And don't call once. Call about 50 times. It does not sound great. But let me ask you this. Again, we are speaking with Alex Matthews. He's the national chair of Restore the Fourth. And I'm told the link to the website is now on our links page at philhewlettandfriends.com. Thank you very much. Now, let's say we consumers get everything we want in a final bill. Who's to say the NSA, the CIA, Homeland Security, FBI, etc. won't go ahead and covertly do what's in this Senate version anyway?
That is a good point, and I'll get to it in just a second. If you are going to make calls and do communications, we have a website specifically for that on cybersecurity.
Oh.
And it's at decidethefuture.org.
Decide.
So if you go there, we make it very easy for you.
Decidethefuture.org.
Now, I do get this question a lot because the NSA obviously is not the most trustworthy of actors when it comes to protecting people's rights. But if they were going to simply ignore the law, then the intelligence community would not bother to advocate against this, to advocate to have the law allow them to do what they want. They wouldn't care. They would just do what they wanted to do anyway. The fact that they care about whether CISA passes or not shows that on some level they care about the law. Even if they're going to stretch whatever the law is to the very breaking point to exploit data as much as they can, they do care on some level.
Very interesting, and that's a good answer to this, and I'm hoping for the best, but somehow it seems that things have gone down the river. The Fourth Amendment, if you could, just give us a brief reminder about that, because our stuff is supposed to be private and unavailable for the government to sift through, according to the Fourth Amendment, but how far gone is the basic right that is explained in the Fourth Amendment at this point of the game?
Well, the Fourth Amendment says that we must be secure in our persons, papers, and effects, and that the government can only get into that, can only search your stuff or seize your person if it has probable cause to suspect you in particular of being involved in a crime. So mass surveillance under a plain reading of the Fourth Amendment is just out. Hmm. You can't do it. Yeah. And that's because the founders didn't like what the British were doing.
Yeah.
Now, how far gone are we? We are less far gone than in 2002, when people were panicked out by the September 11th attacks. We are less far gone than in 2012 before Edward Snowden came along. Mm-hmm. A lot more people are getting informed on this and are advocating and organizing and pushing forward litigation to try and restore our Fourth Amendment rights.
Edward Snowden, you mentioned him. Just real quick, I want to ask you, will he ultimately be vindicated and considered a hero?
I think he's already been vindicated, because every time that he, the documents he turned over have indicated that the NSA is doing something, then it's turned out to be true. And the reaction of the NSA has not been, oh, it's false, it's false. The reaction has been, yes, but let me tell you why this is a good thing for you.
Yeah, right.
So there is no doubt that he gave a substantial amount of truthful information to the American public that we needed to know.
Alex Matthews is the national chair of Restore the Fourth. Their website is on our links page, as is decidethefuture.org. That you want to click on that to know what to say when you call up your congressperson to say, please, whatever you do, don't let the Cyber Information Sharing Act make it all the way to the president's desk the way it stands until you put in there some protections that fall in line with what the Fourth Amendment says. So thank you for bringing this to our attention. Alex Matthews, good luck with this, and we'll keep track of how everything's going and maybe talk to you again in the near future.
Thank you, Phil.
You're welcome. All right, on to other things. Let's pull this truck into a U-turn with the whole Taylor Swift lawsuit. You're familiar with that, Chris. Right? Over who owns the lyrics to the hit song Shake It Off. A court will decide if Taylor stole those lyrics. What I want to know is if this sort of alleged theft goes on all the time among artist circles or among around those circles. And oddly enough, there's a book out right now called Steal Like an Artist, and its companion, the Steal Like an Artist Journal, which encourage stealing. And you'll hear from the artist behind the books next, right here on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot. Available now at Walgreens.
I want to tell you about a spectacular dining experience. It's Portsacall Waterfront Dining, award-winning service and cuisine with a view of the dynamic L.A. Harbor from every seat. Enjoy daily sunset specials, as well as the South Bay's best champagne brunch. The outdoor harborside patio is a perfect setting for happy hour every weekday from 3 to 8. Portsacall Waterfront Dining. For reservations and directions, visit portsacalldining.com or call 310-833-3553. Welcome back. It's Phil Hewlett and Friends. I'm Phil. Chris is here. You hear recognizable riffs in songs all the time, don't you? Storylines in movies and TV shows seem to overlap so much. They're so similar. You wonder, are there any creative ideas out there? Or are they just other people's ideas rebundled and repackaged for your consumer pleasure? If so, how can I get in on this action? Joining us now is New York Times bestselling author of three illustrated books, Steal Like an Artist, Newspaper Blackout, Show Your Work, and his latest work, the Steal Like an Artist Journal, Austin Kleon. Hello.
Hey, thanks for having me.
You know, it makes a lot of sense that behind every great idea is a great idea. Nothing is truly original, is it?
All creative work that we do, it builds on what came before. There's really nothing new under the sun, as the book says.
Right, and you call the book a notebook for creative kleptomaniacs, so you are encouraging theft?
Yeah, what some of the great artists had is they and scientists and original thinkers is that they had this way of looking at the world as if they were casing the joint. You know, they really pay attention and they find those little bits and pieces that they can steal and work into their own work. And so I want to get people thinking like artists and casing the joint of their world and what came before them. And so the journal is an exercise in turning in people into good thieves.
Okay, this is an interesting concept. And thumbing through the book, I mean, it's, let's put it this way, it's a quick read because it's not really a read. It's a, what would you call it exactly?
Well, it's a journal. It's a notebook. It's mostly blank. But what's cool about the journal is that something I learned when I was in middle school is my teacher, Mrs. Neff, instead of asking us to write whatever we wanted to write, every day she wrote a prompt down on the board. And there was something about having that little prompt, that little nudge, that made it easier to fill those pages. And so that's what the journal is. It's full of little exercises and prompts that are supposed to, you know, spark your creativity and get you thinking, because when you look at that blank page, it can be really terrifying. But if it already has a few words on it, you can fill in the rest yourself.
Right. Okay. So I want to explore this theft thing a little more. You're not discounting the idea that somebody could sit on a rock and look out over the ocean and have a creative spark and act on it, are you?
No, in fact, that's what the journal's supposed to be, because I think what happens is we're being influenced all day and we're being inspired all day, but what we don't do is we don't pay attention to what's running through our minds. We're so distracted all day with email and Twitter notifications and texts from our spouses. But opening up a paper journal, it's like sitting on that rock and looking out at the ocean. You're listening to what is going through your head, and you're getting it down on paper so you can do something with it later.
Musicians sue all the time when they hear a riff in a hit song that sounds like the riff in their not-so-successful song, and often those musicians win in court, so this process is not without peril, is it?
Well, no, and that's where the like an artist part comes in, you know. There's something about you have to weave the work into something that's new and something that hasn't been done before, and that is the real artfulness of it, is to, of course, steal something from everyone. And one of the problems with a lot of musicians is that they'll just steal from one musician, and that's a ripoff. But if you steal from 100 musicians, everyone will say how original you are.
Yeah, I think we forget that the patent office often grants patents on existing ideas that have been approved upon.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And so, but it's funny with this idea about theft. You can do things that are legally in the clear that aren't morally clear, and you can do things that are morally clear but aren't legally clear. It's a tricky waters to navigate.
So this really is more about establishing a creative prospecting discipline, right?
Yeah. I mean, a notebook is about private practice, and that's what I love about notebooks. I say that notebooks are a good place to have bad ideas. We're so connected now with our blogs and Twitter. It feels like a first draft culture. You know, people are just sharing their first thoughts. And I think what a lot of people share on these platforms, they ought to be putting them in their journal first and looking at the idea and seeing what it really is. And then give us your second or your third draft of what you share, right?
Yeah, right. Now, you're a New York Times bestselling author. And so the fact that you're encouraging people to go through this process implies that you've done so as well. So you're out there looking for great ideas from other people. So is it safe to assume then that the ideas of others are weaved into your books?
Oh, absolutely. And one of the things I've done in the journal, if you buy it, there's a little search box in the bottom of some of the exercises, and they'll have people's names. And that denotes that I want people to look up those people that are written in that box, because a lot of the exercises were inspired by other artists and other thinkers, and I want to always give credit to those people that came before me. That's part of the ethos of Stealing Like an Artist, the honor amongst thieves, so to speak.
Right, right. And once you ignore that honor, you go to the dark side, don't you?
Absolutely. And it's interesting. When you don't give credit, it not only robs the person who you've taken the inspiration from, it also robs the people that you've shared it with, because they don't have any way of tracing back, of finding that original idea. And so credit is really about being generous to the people who've come before you, but also the people who you're inspiring and you're sharing with.
Right, and if you do decide to go to that dark side, you should prepare for the coming backlash when you're outed.
Yeah, and lawyer up.
For sure. The Steal Like an Artist Journal, as well as Austin's previous book, Steal Like an Artist, Newspaper Blackout, Show Your Work, are all available right now in the store at philhewlettandfriends.com. Worth your time and your money. Austin Kleon, thank you very much, sir.
Thanks so much for having me.
And you thought everybody was so creative, didn't you?
Yeah. Nobody's creative.
No.
From that standpoint, I mean, at the end of the day, almost everything creative that has ever been created has already been created, and the only thing you can do is create off somebody else's creations.
Exactly. What he said. And you know what? Every time I've gone to the patent office with my amazing, great idea that everybody around me said, that's an awesome idea. And I do a quick patent search, and I find out there's like 50 patents just like that, just waiting to be approved.
Yeah. Yeah. Being an inventor is very challenging in that same regard.
Yeah. And should I make mine green and be patent application number 51?
Well, you see, Phil, in the history of ideas, all ideas have already been ideated. Well, thought of.
Yeah, right.
There are no ideas left to be explored.
Those guys that came up with the Uber ride deal, that was a unique idea, wasn't it?
Very, very unique, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's paid off huge for those guys.
Sure it has, and a lot of people who become Uber drivers are making some good money. But they also put themselves out there, because you never know when you're going to pick up a lunatic.
Right, you have to be careful, and I'm sure you may have at this point seen the video of the Uber driver who was getting smacked relentlessly. That actually happened here in Newport Beach, California recently. And if you haven't seen it, check out the video. It's pretty easy to find. There's a drunk guy in the back of an Uber car. He refuses to give the driver directions on where he's trying to get to. The driver has enough. He actually turns the camera around on his rearview mirror so that you can see the passenger. And he pulls over into a parking lot and says, hey, look, man, you're too drunk to give me directions. Just get out. Guy gets angry and just starts smacking the driver in the back of the head. Luckily, he does open the door to turn on the dome light before he does that, so we get a good look at him because it's nighttime.
Yeah.
And after smacking him about 10 times, the driver turns around and just blows a pile of mace in his face.
Yeah, the dude's lost his job now, hasn't he?
He was a Taco Bell executive. Yeah. He's lost his job.
Good.
So be cool in the back of an Uber car. He was wasted.
Yeah.
You can tell.
Completely sauced. Hey, that's it for hour one of the program. So much more to come, including how good is Adele, huh? Move aside Taylor Swift. When Adele is busy putting out music, she very well might be the queen of pop. And also, finally, Victoria's Secret puts out some lingerie that maybe you don't want to take off for any reason. Don't ever let anybody touch it, for that matter. My goodness, what are they up to over there? That's coming up, and a whole lot more next.
I start again. Monday, November 9th at 6 p.m. in a very rare Southern California appearance, Melodyne at Portsacall Waterfront Dining. For ticket information, call 310-833-3553. And I hear the echo.
Here's a great idea for your next outing. A cruise of the L.A. Harbor on a Spirit Cruises yacht. Whether you have a large party, a company outing, wedding reception, a reunion, or you need the perfect setting for a romantic evening, Spirit Cruises offers everything you need to relax and enjoy your time on the water. For a limited time, enjoy Sunday brunch at Portsacall Waterfront Dining right next door. And the first Spirit Cruises Harbor Cruise of the day is free. For more information, call 310-548-8080 or visit spiritmarine.com.
You are listening to Phil Hewlett and Friends. This is hour two of the talk show, where you get nothing but fun, informative, sometimes unexpected conversation about the stories you care about. You'll hear from the experts, authors, and others. And we hope to put a little smile on your face along the way. This hour, I sure hope you know the difference between Veterans Day and Memorial Day. Our travel guy has a thing or two to say about that, plus some points of interest to add to your itinerary, plus changes at Twitter you need to know about. And here's a question. Is your lawmaker a member of the Ku Klux Klan? I'm Phil Hewlett. Thanks for listening. Chris Martin is here today. Chris, we'll get started with you because you've got all the stories that matter today. And today's a big day in a lot of cities and counties and states across the country, isn't it? Why?
Mm-hmm. Well, you were just talking about lawmakers. Today is actually Election Day.
Ooh.
State and local elections are being held all over the country, and devoted citizens hit the booth to affect local decision-making. Let's see. What we have here is a couple of hot-button things on the ballots that are of note. Would you like to discuss those?
I'd love to hear what they are, first of all, and decide whether I care to discuss them.
Okay. See what you think about this one. In Mississippi, there's a citizen amendment on the ballot to allow residents to sue the state to get more money for schools.
You can't sue the government.
You can if the amendment is approved.
That would be a precedent. Do you think government would allow us the opportunity to sue? Then the floodgates will open.
Well, it's up to the citizens to vote on whether or not this will be a possibility. The government, you know, at the end of the day, the government doesn't really call the shots, or at least that's the way the system was designed. Us as the citizens have the power. If we unite and hit the booths.
And pay attention and learn your civics in elementary school, even though your teacher forgot what civics means.
Mm-hmm. Here's an interesting one for the stoners out there. Ohio will be voting to become the first Midwestern state and fifth state overall to legalize recreational marijuana. They'll be joining
Ohio.
That group.
See, I could think Colorado can handle it, but can Ohio handle it?
We'll find out. But speaking of Colorado, they will also be voting to decide on how they're going to spend the $66 million in tax revenue they brought in from recreational marijuana sales.
I think they ought to throw a party.
A variety of things they are discussing, a party possibly being one of them.
Yeah, why not?
A couple other hot-button issues. Houston will vote on upholding sexual orientation discrimination laws. So, in other words, not being able to discriminate somebody based on their sexual orientation.
All right.
Salt Lake City could vote in the first openly gay mayor. And only the second female mayor in Salt Lake City's history.
Salt Lake City?
Salt Lake City.
Wow. All right.
Very probable, but it's a very tight race over there. How about this one? 3 of 7 Pennsylvania Supreme Court spots are up for grabs, which apparently those are important spots.
In Pennsylvania. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Pennsylvania, big state.
Yeah, sure.
Swings a lot of power. Those are the only ones that I have for you, but there are other issues that may be more important to you in your local area. So go out and vote if you believe.
Yeah, there you go. If you feel like you should exercise your right and your privilege to vote and make some change, your vote does count. So if you don't vote, don't complain.
It counts unless
it gets overturned.
It gets overturned, or unless you're like a Republican in a predominantly Democratic area, or vice versa.
Well, that's not a reason not to vote.
No, because what you do is you start to implement change by creating momentum the other direction, right?
Sure.
They're like, okay, well, the Democrat won, but he only won by 15% this year, and next year we only won by 10%. Obviously, things are changing or whatever.
Sure, things are always changing. Like this. You know, the last time the president wasn't a Democrat or a Republican?
Before Democrat or Republicans existed?
No, we've had those around for a long time. Democrats came around the Civil War, a little before that. Republicans have been around for quite a long time. But no, Millard Fillmore, 1850.
Oh, old Millard.
Yeah, Civil War era, right? 1850. He was a member of the Whig Party, and he was the president.
Back then, they all looked like a member of the Whig Party to me.
Yeah, they were wearing those powder wigs, huh?
Mm.
Throwback from the British days.
Yep.
You know who really owns pop music when she puts her mind to it? And other times, she's got other things to do, like have a baby and be a mom and hang out with the fam.
I know who you're talking about.
Who am I talking about?
Madonna.
No, not Madonna. Madonna's days are over. She can just do the Vegas deal and be happy. But no, the popular music, selling records right now, today, and just crushing the competition. And the competition would include people like Taylor Swift.
Correct. Yeah, and you're actually referring to Adele.
Oh, yeah.
Adele, she's quite a powerhouse. She's back on the music scene. She's picking up right where she left off. Don't forget she was 21 years old when she dropped her album 21 and won numerous Grammys and pulled at the heartstrings of everybody all over the world.
And recorded the whole thing sitting on a stool.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Pretty much. Just using their powerful vocals. The English singer's new song, Hello, smashed the digital sales record for a week by double the previous number. In 2009, that was a Flo Rida song called Right Round. Sold 650,000 copies. Hers sold 1.1 million, which is the first ever solo to break a million downloads in a week.
Wow.
Or single album, single song release.
So the gauntlet has been thrown.
Yeah, and in many ways, check this out. Her 27 million Vivo views in the first 24 hours broke Taylor Swift's record at number one for Bad Blood back in a couple of years ago, which only sold had 20 million views. She set the single day streaming record with 2.3 million streams. She's only the second English artist to enter Billboard at number one behind Elton John for Candle in the Wind.
Yeah.
Her last album, 21, sold over 11 million copies in the U.S., and her new album, 25, is set to drop November 20th.
You know what this says to
me?
If
you're interested.
Adele must have a broader audience than, say, a Taylor Swift. I think we all know Taylor Swift's songs by osmosis because she gets covered so much, and you're watching the nightly news, and they throw a little thing on Taylor Swift because they think that's going to keep people watching the news because they don't really know what's happening in the news after all. And then they throw on the Taylor Swift thing and tease you all the way to the end of the show. Oh, we're going to see some clip from a video that we've never seen before. Okay, fine. Popular singer. I'll stick around for that. So you hear the song like eight times over the course of a 20-minute newscast, and now you've got the music in your head. So you learn by osmosis. On the other hand, Adele, I believe, has a more active, larger demographic than maybe a Taylor Swift does, and that's why she's doing so well.
Yeah, it seems to me like Taylor Swift's audience is targeted down to the teen and maybe young 20s crowd because of what she sings about and the high percussion behind her music, which has almost become dance music nowadays, heartbreak dance music.
Right.
But Adele, she's like a modern-day Celine Dion.
Yeah, well, sure. Maybe bigger than that.
Maybe bigger than that. I did want to share one last thing with you to let you know how big she just might be.
Yeah.
Justin Bieber, Ellie Goulding, and One Direction have all moved their release dates of their albums to avoid being released around the same time as Adele's new album.
Yeah, wow, that is big. Now, you say, how big is she then? After taking 5 years off, has she let herself go?
No, she looks good. If you haven't seen the new video, Phil, have you heard the song Hello?
Yes, I have.
Oh, okay. You like it?
Yeah, it's pretty good.
You didn't look at it on Vivo where she is prominently displayed in the video?
I didn't watch the video. No, I heard the song and I thought, yeah, that's a pretty good song. That's solid.
Besides the fact that I love her voice, she, to me, looks like a very attractive woman now. She's 25 years old. She's growing up. Also, it's hard to imagine how young she is.
She's somebody's mom, Chris.
She is beautiful.
Is she?
I think so. I think she's
just still
gorgeous.
Sings sitting on a stool.
She was standing, actually, in most of this one. The video was actually kind of confusing to me, but her appearance was not.
Yeah.
She looked good.
Is she still in a feud with Nicki Minaj?
If she is, I hope she just ignores it and gets out of it.
Is that a real thing, or is that a figment of my imagination? Who was it that was feuding with Wither said that she should lose some weight?
No, that's Miley Cyrus. Really? For a different reason.
Lose some weight and get off the stool and walk around the stage when she sings. Now, who was the singer that, I'm sure I'm going to get a text from my wife here in a moment because she listens and she corrects everything I say.
Some spiteful, jealous.
In a loving way.
Person.
Yes, but a big star. I just don't remember who it was.
Big star.
I think it was Bob Jonas, one of the Jonas Brothers. Bob, he's one of the Jonas. No, that wasn't him.
I think Nick Jonas is the only one that still makes music. And I don't know why I know that.
Does he have a brother, Bob? No?
Maybe.
Okay. All right.
If not, I know Bob's his uncle.
Are you a Trekkie?
Sometimes. Yeah, I'm a fan of the... I really think that the first J.J. Abrams version was really good.
There could be another Star Trek TV show coming. There could.
Oh.
I have some details about it, and I'm going to tell you about it next, right here on Phil Hewlett and Friends. I
start again. Monday, November 9th at 6 p.m. in a very rare Southern California appearance, Melodyne at Portsacall Waterfront Dining. For ticket information, call 310-833-3553. And I
we'll be right back.
Here's a great idea for your next outing. A cruise of the L.A. Harbor on a Spirit Cruises yacht. Whether you have a large party, a company outing, wedding reception, a reunion, or you need the perfect setting for a romantic evening, Spirit Cruises offers everything you need to relax and enjoy your time on the water. For a limited time, enjoy Sunday brunch at Portsacall Waterfront Dining right next door, and the first Spirit Cruises Harbor Cruise of the day is free. For more information, call 310-548-8080 or visit spiritmarine.com.
I just like clockwork, my wife Remy sent me a note and settled the whole feud thing. It was Lady Gaga who said that Adele should lose some weight and get off the stool and walk around the stage a little when she's singing. Nicki Minaj and Miley Cyrus were feuding. And there may also have been a feud between Nicki Minaj and Mariah Carey. We're not absolutely sure on that.
All right.
Can we just get them all in a ring and let them go at it?
What would you pay for that pay-per-view ticket?
Oh, easily, $100.
Throw Paris Hilton in there. What's the redhead?
Kardashians?
Throw the Kardashians in there. Sure, throw them in there.
What do they used to call it? The cage match, right? And then the battle royale.
Yeah.
You've got like everybody in there, and they don't get the tag out. The last one in the cage wins.
Just throw some steel chairs and empty beer bottles in there and see what happens.
I like that.
I'm glad you set us straight on our celebrity diva.
Well, actually, it was my wife, Remy.
Thank you, Remy.
All credit goes to her for just about everything, frankly. While we're talking about the celebrity diva food chain, do you think humans are at the top of the food chain?
Yeah, I would imagine. I mean, we have guns.
Well, according to the Smithsonian, we are not at the top of the food chain. We're actually kind of low because we eat both meat and plants. Our place is roughly the same as pigs and anchovies.
Do pigs eat meat?
They will if you throw them out in a bucket of slop.
Whoa.
They'll just go right through there. We're way below tigers, crocodiles, and boa constrictors. But it seems to me I could probably catch a boa. Slice it open and fillet it and throw it on the barbecue.
Well, I think it sounds to me like they're saying if it were hand-to-hand, or in this case, hand-to-scale, hand-to-paw combat.
If all things were equal.
All things being equal. Yeah, we can't have knives and guns. And a matter of fact, we probably couldn't have clothes, meaning they'd have to throw you in the ring with it naked.
Yeah.
And in that case, we're pretty vulnerable against most animals.
Yeah, sure.
Most of those predator animals.
Yeah.
Right. I don't know about a boa. I feel like I could probably take a boa constrictor, but...
You think? Well, it depends how big it is, too, because once it starts wrapping around you, it's over.
Yeah, you're right. And they have that real quick snap to their jaw where they could probably just grab you by the leg and then slowly roll you up. Boy, that'd be a terrible way to go.
Yeah, suffocation. Just get crushed. Mm. There's a new Star Trek, and shame on your buddy who says Star Trek. Is it about time that you corrected your buddy?
Yeah.
And say, dude, it's not Star Trek, it's Star Trek. I've been meaning to tell you that for, 40 years? Will you please? It's Star Trek. Anyway, there's a new Star Trek series in the works at CBS, but you won't be able to watch it on TV. Thanks to the geniuses over at CBS, it'll be on their All Access channel, which is a subscription streaming service. And if you've ever streamed any video from CBS, hoofah.
Not easy.
It's just not good.
They haven't worked all the bugs out yet? Is that what you're saying?
Or they won't work out all the bugs. If you're going to charge people for streaming, wouldn't you make it the best possible experience?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe they're... I just watched Steve Jobs this week, and maybe they're waiting for the technology to catch up.
Yeah, right. I had a free trial period with CBS All Access.
Yeah.
And I tried to watch Survivor on that. It was hideous.
What happens? Does it just freeze out?
It's just
regularly.
I mean, I have a super fast connection at my house, so the upload download speed is not an issue. But try to watch it full screen on the TV, which you can do if you have the right appliances. And it just looked like, I don't know, 1999. Okay? That kind of streaming quality.
Wow.
Anyway, that aside, it sounds like it won't be directly related to any previous Star Trek shows or movies. Here's what the press release says. It will introduce new characters seeking imaginative new worlds and new civilizations. And it apparently is slated, actually, to debut on CBS in January of 2017 on broadcast. so that they can hook you in, and then they'll move it to CBS All Access. So you'll
well, and we'll see about that. If that thing pulls in a significant number of viewers on CBS, they might not let it go either.
Yeah, right.
It's been a popular franchise for a long time. I like the Jean-Luc Picard version of it.
Yeah.
The Next Generation.
Sure.
That was good.
Patrick Stewart?
Patrick Stewart, all the rest of those guys, Data.
Another TV show that's coming back.
Okay.
The Greatest American Hero. And I'll admit, I never saw a single episode. I remember seeing the beginning of the show and, oh, that's on, let's change the channel. But I never gave it a shot. It ran on ABC from 1981 to 1983. It starred William Catt as a teacher who gets superpowers when he puts on a superhero suit that was given to him by aliens. That happens all the time, doesn't it?
In almost every superhero movie.
And he's kind of an idiot because he immediately loses the instruction manual and does dumb things like fly into buildings since he doesn't know how to control the suit. But, of course, he somehow always manages to save the day.
Yeah, clumsily.
Yeah, the show might be more notable for having one of the all-time great theme songs, which also ended up in a classic bit on Seinfeld.
And we have that theme song for you here.
No, we don't. We didn't. We forgot to prepare for that before the show happened. So if you know the theme song to The Greatest American Hero, go ahead and hum it to yourself. We'll wait. 3, 4. Okay, good. Thank you. Now, back to you, Chris.
Yes, sir.
We actually have more TV news. And if you missed Jon Stewart on TV, you may be seeing more of him or more of his essence. Where?
At your local home box office.
HBO?
HBO, yeah. Jon Stewart has signed a 4-year production deal with HBO and just in time for the 2016 election cycle, huh?
Oh,
guys,
yeah.
Getting back in the saddle.
Okay.
HBO released a statement saying that the next phase of Jon Stewart's career will begin with short-form digital content for HBO Now and HBO Go. So just like you were talking about with CBS and their online streaming content, it sounds like that's where Stewart's energies will be focused, at least to start.
Yeah, okay, so he's not necessarily in front of the camera. He's behind it for a while. Is
well,
that the
let
idea?
Me tell you this. Part of the statement from HBO also says his new role will allow him to comment on current events. We'll see how that all develops. But he does also have what's known as a first look option, which means that HBO has the first crack at films and TV ventures that Stewart develops.
Yeah. All right.
I guess HBO has that. At the end of the day, hopefully they utilize him properly. It's a 4-year deal. 4 years is a very long time. That guy is.
He was on the. Remember seeing him on the Emmys when his show won something? He went up there on stage and let some other guy talk because he looked retired, didn't he?
He's got the full beard going now. He might have even put on a few lbs.
It looked like he put on about 20 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
It just kind of slouchy and on vacation, really.
And why not? He's probably earned it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, after doing what he's done for 20-something years.
Said, I'm done. I'm absolutely done. But if he's going to get back in front of the camera, we'll see if he hits the treadmill.
Yeah.
Or if he just goes with that elder statesman look.
When you have that kind of work ethic, I don't think you can stay on vacation like that for very long.
Yeah, yeah, right. He's got to do something. Can't let the moss grow under his feet. You know, I bag a bit about TGI Fridays, the restaurant.
A bit, Phil?
A bit, yeah. Have I done that more than twice on the program? No? I have? Okay. I found an interesting note. This is courtesy of Gothamist, all right? Talked about New York City a lot. The first TGI Fridays was started as a bar in New York City back in 1965. Now, I don't know if this is the very location that I went to in New York City when I had a half an hour to burn before I walked 2 blocks to my next meeting. And I sat down at a table at the TGI Fridays in Manhattan, and it was a half an hour before anybody said boo to me. And so I walked out of there, and it was a good excuse for me to eat my first Nathan's hot dog. I walked past the stand, threw $3 over the counter, and I said, give me one of those with some mustard on it. And they said, here you go. And I said, keep the change. And I made it to my meeting 5 minutes late. Thank you, TGI Fridays. But that was the beginning of a long legacy of bad experiences at this restaurant, consistently bad. The food is good, though. I will give them that. Anyway, that's the common rant that I get, that I give you. But TGI Fridays started in 1965, New York City, by a guy who created it just because he wanted a place to meet women.
You know, I would say that it still holds pretty true to the man's original vision, even today.
There are a lot of women in there with 5 or 6 kids running wild.
There's that, and TGI Fridays, what I've noticed is it is, the whole thing is built around a centralized bar location, and it does sort of create a bar-like atmosphere, even though there's restaurant seating around it.
And they keep that bar smell. You know the smell I'm talking about?
The one like stale beer and old booze?
It's like shoe dirt and beer mixed together and, I don't know, potato chip dust. What is it that there's a smell that bars get? It's hard to explain and hard to put a finger on it, but every bar's got that smell.
Oh, I know it well. I actually have one of those little trees hanging in my car that puts off that smell.
Right. Well, TGI like Fridays has solved that smell because their bar doesn't stink necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that may not be the case. You know what? Maybe those little Chinese dim sum things, that the wraps that they sell, maybe the sesame oil or something like that in there throws off the scent.
Whatever they're doing, they should keep doing it because nobody wants to smell old feet and stale beer when they go into a place.
I agree. All right. Fine. You know what? Next Wednesday is Veterans Day. Okay. Back in May, it was Memorial Day. Now, you know the difference, right? Chris, you know the difference between the two.
One, you memorialize veterans, and one, you recognize those that have passed, and one, you recognize those that are either still serving or still alive, right?
Yeah. You've got the two differences, correct? Our travel guy thinks that there are way too many people who don't know the difference, and he's put together something special for us. Now, he won't tell me exactly what it is for whatever reason, but that's our travel guy. We put him on the air. And hilarity ensues half of the time. So we've got our fingers crossed. Gary Warner, our travel guy, joins us next right here on Phil Hewlett and Friends. All right, thanks for listening to Phil Hewlett and Friends, Adda.com, and you're at our website. Poke around a little bit. There are plenty of things to see. And while you're there, don't forget to subscribe so you never miss a thing about the show. All right. Wednesday, the 11th of November, 2015, is Veterans Day, as opposed to Memorial Day, which happened at the end of May this year and will happen at the end of May next year as well. Joining us now to clarify things as to the difference between the two holidays is our travel guy, Gary Warner. Hey, Gary.
Hey, how you doing, Phil?
Now, I'm doing well. Clearly, you believe that there is a large enough percentage of the population that gets these 2 days mixed up that you feel that you need to clarify things. Is that correct?
Yeah. Well, first of all, the biggest impact on people's time is that Memorial Day is always the last weekend in May, so you get a three-day holiday, whereas Veterans Day is always anchored to November 11th. That was the day of the end of World War One. It used to be called Armistice Day, and then when World War II came along, they changed it to a more general Veterans Day. Veterans Day is for people who fought and served in wars. Memorial Day is for those who fought and died in the wars. So, You can go to Arlington National Cemetery or things like that. But this is the day that we're supposed to celebrate those who fought and survived. So you've got parades, you've got picnics, you've got ship openings if you're lucky enough to live near a Navy base, that sort of thing.
Yeah. Okay. That's clearly the difference. And thank you for pointing that out for those who did not know that. Don't worry, we won't hold it against you. But this is why we're here, to help you and to point you in the right direction. And pointing people in the right direction is your job, Gary, as the travel guy. And so for this Veterans Day recognition and all the other things, if we do happen to take a couple days off and go see some things Veterans Day related, where would you take us?
Or even a little bit down the line, a little bit farther away on some of these. These are just, I picked one spot that I really like for each of the four major services. That's Army, Navy, Air Force, and Marines. Sorry, Coast Guard folks, I'm not going your way on this one. Interesting spots, my favorite spots, some of my favorite spots. Some of them are kind of odd. Some of them are, more traditional. Let's start out with the Navy.
Okay.
okay? You know, the oldest force, basically, in the United States military. Down near Houston, at LaPorte, in the Houston Ship Canal, is the USS Texas. And this is a battleship that was built in 1912.
Oh.
And it's now a National Historic Site. Now, we all know there's lots of museums out there, aircraft carriers like, you know, the Midway down in San Diego, all over the place, the Missouri, the New Jersey. Most of them are later, you know, even like end of World War II or post-World War II ships. This is a ship that fought in World War I. It actually started out, it was sent down to Mexico to kind of like, you know, make the Mexicans scared on what's called the Tampico incident, which we won't get into, but it served in World War I, it served in World War II, it shelled the beaches at D-Day, and it's just an amazing ship. It's, you know, over 100 years old, and is a quick trip out of Houston if you're down that way.
Is that the oldest battleship museum in the country?
Well, that there's some question about that. There's a one, I believe, I think it's in Japan, of a pre-dreadnought. The ships that we think of that have the turrets with the guns, they're called dreadnoughts. But so it's the oldest in the United States.
Okay. All right. Good. All right. So we've got the Navy. How about the Air Force next?
Well, the Air Force has this amazing collection. They have a number of great museums down in Tucson, the Strategic Air Command Museum out in Wichita. But the best is really the U.S. Air Force Museum in Dayton.
Oh.
This has an amazing collection of aircraft from the, you know, cloth-stitched balloons that they use to try to, you know, haul people up into watch the Civil War battlefields, all the way through to these, you know, supersonic jets of today. The Air Force was part of the Army until basically World War II, the end of World War II. And one of my favorite things there is the Northrop Valkyrie supersonic bomber, which is this huge bomber with a swept wing that they decided not to build. But they've parked it in there, and that's where the cafe is.
Oh.
So you eat underneath this atomic, you know, it was supposed to drop the atomic bomb on Moscow, you know, and you get there and you get your hamburgers and hot dogs and everything like that.
We didn't do that, did we? We chose not to drop a bomb on Moscow.
Thank goodness. And this museum is on its sixth expansion. And the other thing is that not too far away, NFL Hall of Fame. So, you know, you can.
Oh, that you make quite a trip out of Dayton, can't you?
Yep.
So there's probably one of the best reasons to go to Ohio is Dayton.
I think so, because there's also, you know, great the Warren G. Harding Memorial and things like that. You know, there's sort of these lost presidents. Ohio is sort of the birthplace of mediocre presidents. So there's all these museums to people like, you know, Warren G. Harding and McKinley and things like that.
Okay, gotcha. All right, so Air Force was part of the Army. Why don't we go to the Army next?
The Army. This is an odd one. You know, there's a lot of great Army spots to pick, but I always love going to this place. It's called the Pershing Hotel, and it's in Paris.
Oh.
And what it was that it was the headquarters for General Black Jack Pershing, the leader of the U.S. Expeditionary Forces that went over in 1917 when we got into World War I in Paris. Very nice spot. And after the war, immediately after the war, it became the first American Legion post. And they would bring, you know, chunks of like Vimini Bridge and other things, plaques for heroes from all over the place and put them up on the walls. But as the crowd kind of aged and real estate got really expensive in Paris, eventually this became a boutique hotel that now is favored by the fashion industry.
Oh.
So they've done, there's a lot of like odd lights. They have a wall of grass, like it's like a lawn that goes up a wall and things like that. And you're more likely to see supermodels than old veterans at this hotel. But still, they've kept all of the memorials around the hotel. So
well, regardless kind of who you see, a supermodel or an aging veteran, in either case, it's a reason to salute.
Yeah, and it's just an amazing. Yes, well, there's a joke there, but I won't do it.
All right, fine.
And finally, let's do the Marines.
Sure.
The good old Marines. If you're a Marine, probably the best news you can get is that you have been assigned to Kaneohe Bay, Hawaii.
Kaneohe.
Kaneohe Bay. It's on the windward side of Oahu, around from, you know, if you go from Honolulu around Diamond Head and up there, Kaneohe Bay, there's a big It used to be just a Marine air base, but now they also have some ground troops there. It's an absolutely gorgeous spot, and one of the most famous spots is Kaneohe Bay Sandbar. And that is this strip of white beach in this beautiful ocean that appears during, you know, low tide and stays there except for the very highest tides. And you hire boats to take you out there and, you know, and party on. Party on to the point that they're talking about banning alcohol out there now because it got a little out of hand this last summer. But you have this beautiful view out over the Kaneohe Bay, and you see the air station with the jets and the helicopters, and then behind that is the Pali, the giant cliffs, which also have a military history. That's where King Kamehameha's forces threw the warriors of the King of Oahu over the side in the last big battle to unify the Hawaiian Islands.
They just picked them up en masse and tossed them over the side.
Well, yeah, or they basically just chased him, and the guys decided to jump.
Oh, yeah, they had a choice.
Yeah, either. So I mean, this place is just absolutely gorgeous. It's absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah. All right. Well, we get yet another lesson, courtesy of Gary Warner, our travel guy, and we'll talk to you next week, and it'll be after Veterans Day. What do you plan to do on Wednesday?
We'll be back on some fun stuff. A luncheon that's going on down here in Eugene, where I have my headquarters, that I'm going to go to. But I also, will get in touch with some of my military friends and just thank them. Remember, this is everybody who, you know, from the last guy out to the oldest veteran, you know, last guy out of Afghanistan, to get out of the service.
Yeah.
There's a lot of young guys. This one's for the young guys. It's not just the old guys, too.
Gotcha. All right. Gary Warner, thanks so much. Excellent segment. We'll talk to you again next week.
Sure thing, Phil. Take care.
Yeah. All right. So he was talking about fashion models, supermodels. Finally, Victoria's Secret has fashioned a piece of undergarment that you more or less have to be a supermodel and have at least her salary to afford this one. Maybe more than that. Now, wait till you hear about this next. Chris knows all about it, and he'll tell you here on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
I start again.
Monday, November 9th at 6 p.m. in a very rare Southern California appearance, Melodyne at Ports of Call, Waterfront Dining. For ticket information, call 310-833-3553. And I
here's a great idea for your next outing, a cruise of the L.A. Harbor on a Spirit Cruises yacht. Whether you have a large party, a company outing, wedding reception, a reunion, or you need the perfect setting for a romantic evening, Spirit Cruises offers everything you need to relax and enjoy your time on the water. For a limited time, enjoy Sunday brunch at Ports of Call Waterfront Dining right next door, and the first Spirit Cruises Harbor Cruise of the day is free. For more information, call 310-548-8080 or visit spiritmarine.com. All right, so if you've got the sexy lingerie, what's the point of that? It's only going to be on for a little while, right? But you don't want to misplace this one. If you happen to disrobe, what does Victoria's Secret put together now?
Well, they put out what they put out every year, which is a fantasy bra, and Victoria's Secret is showing off another over-the-top bejeweled bra just in time for the holiday season. Men, you listening?
What?
Yeah. The bra is adorned with over 6,500 precious gems, including diamonds, blue topaz, yellow sapphires, and pink quartz, all set in 18-karat gold.
Wow.
Dubbed the Fireworks Fantasy Bra, it is valued at a reasonable $2 million.
Look at them jewels.
Check out your bank account. Those are some nice jewels you got there.
Yeah, that's right. Wow. You are multifaceted.
That's right. Victoria's Secret angel Lily Aldridge has been tapped to be the model who will show off the brassiere.
Who? Lily Aldridge.
Lily Aldridge. Check her out. You can catch the catwalk at the Victoria's Secret Fashion Show, which is set for early December. I think December 9th, something like that.
Yeah.
Ellie Goulding's going to play there. I like her.
Mm-hmm.
She's cool.
Pretty lady.
She's got a husband.
Does she?
Yeah, and she admits she works out twice a day.
Well, you would have to do something like that to be in that kind of shape.
That's my in-depth background check on Lily Aldridge.
Well done. Did you stop searching once you saw husband? Is that pretty much the...
No.
That's the stopping point?
What are you trying to imply?
I'm trying to say you might have been more interested had she not had a ring on it.
Look, I've had a wonderful wife. I've had a ring on me for so long. It's, you know, is it even a moot point? I'm just doing research for the show. How dare you?
Mm-hmm. All right. Not accusing you of anything other than being a dude.
Yeah, all right, fine. Yes, we are wired in a particular way, aren't we? Now, if you search around Instagram for 5 minutes, you notice that there are a lot of young ladies who would like your attention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, girls of Instagram.
And some of these girls of Instagram become Insta stars, don't they?
Yeah, they do. And especially when you look at the sort of pays per million, or what is it that we talk about, Phil?
Cost per thousand?
Cost per thousand. When you have that kind of popularity and you have that many people following you, there is a way to monetize it.
Not on Instagram.
But Instagram will lead to other things. It can lead to YouTube channels. It can lead to...
Or somebody says, here, hold this sign up, the name of my .com company, and we'll pay you this much money for how many views you get on your Instagram photo.
Absolutely. And by the way, when you say not on Instagram, you're actually incorrect, because in this story about this young lady I'm about to tell you briefly, she was paid good money to wear people's dresses in Instagram photos.
Really?
Yes, and that happens a lot.
Because she's a tastemaker.
Some women are paid thousands of dollars to wear other people's clothes, to wear their jewelry, just because the other girls will see it, and then they'll want to go out and buy it. We're talking about Esina O'Neill, and she was an Instagram girl that had 777,000 Instagram followers. She had almost 300,000 YouTube followers. Obviously, there's people with more than that, but that's a pretty decent number. Recently, she released a video explaining why she is quitting social media.
Ah.
Mm-hmm. She says she realized how contrived, fake, and forced it was, constantly trying to prove to the world how amazing her life and body were.
Hmm. What is she?
This is for the girls out there.
Did she get religion or something? What's going on?
No, she just, I think she became introspective and realized that maybe it was a vapid way to spend her childhood. She's 18 years old.
Well, that's quite an astonishing thing to note that she would come to that epiphany at such a young age.
It is. She said, I spend every day scrolling through a screen, viewing and comparing myself to others. It was easier to look at shiny and pretty things and pretend to be happy than actually stop and get real with myself.
Yeah.
Since then, she's deleted more than 2,000 photos and edited captions of truth on the remaining images.
Well, hopefully she's stored up some of the money she's made.
Yeah, 18 years old. I think her parents are still helping float her boat.
Yeah. Float her boat. On Twitter, they've made some changes. Did you know about this?
I did not.
You know,
what are you talking about?
When you see somebody has tweeted on the Twitter and you like what they've tweeted, you have a little star and you click on that star, and that indicates that you have indeed liked what that post says, or what it displays, or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. It's just an indication that you like it. And that is the kind of impetus that the person who tweeted in the first place needs to go ahead and tweet more of that.
Right. Love me.
Yeah.
Or like me.
Like me, yeah. So it's a star. But as of today, Twitter has changed. Now, you may not see this on your app because you'll have to update your app. But if you look at Twitter in a browser on your computer, you will see the change. No longer is there a star. It is now a heart. Hmm. And Twitter says the heart is more universally recognized as a symbol of adoration than is, around the world that is, than is a star. A star implies other things in other cultures.
Hmm.
And so they've dropped the star and added the heart. What do you think of that?
I don't like it.
Why?
I don't like it at all, because the star, which, by the way, is actually a favorite, right? You're favoriting something.
Or you just like it. Yeah, I like
it. Or
that.
You just like it. And I like that idea of being able to like something, because you can like something for a variety of reasons, but you can only love something.
Oh, to you, the heart means love.
Correct. Yes, it's a heart. It means, oh, I love this.
Such a romantic.
Yeah. Well, the heart is a very very powerful place, and you can't take it for granted like that, Phil. You can't just willy-nilly start throwing hearts around on everything because it's a very serious subject. So, a star is very simple.
So you won't be hearting people's
unless tweets. I really, really like it. And I have a feeling that favorites are going to go down because of this change, because people are going to be reluctant to love something as opposed to like it.
Yeah. Well, all right.
How do you like that?
I think I like that.
Star or heart-like?
Yeah, very sensitive guy. You know,
thank you.
Your dude status is in question, but it's just the same. Very sensitive guy. have you heard of the group Anonymous? They're a bunch of hackers. You remember them? Anonymous?
No.
They like to out people. All right. Mm. And what they found is their way into the Twitter account of the Ku Klux Klan.
Hmm.
And they say that they will tomorrow, November 4th, out 1,000 people who are listed in the ranks of the Ku Klux Klan. The Ku Klux Klan. Just say the KKK, Phil. Yeah. It'll be easier. It's Ku. That's right. Ku Klux Klan. Now, initially, they've thrown out some names just to wet your whistle, including the mayor of Lexington, Kentucky, Jim Gray, who vehemently denies it. And also a senator from Indiana. I'll get you his name as well because he vehemently denies it. It's the guy from Lexington is a Democrat, in case you want to know. And the senator from Indiana is Dan Coats, a Republican. And he says there absolutely is no way I'm involved with the KKK. So what are they going to say, right? You can deny. But,
yeah, I'm the Grand Dragon. What are you going to do about it?
Yeah.
Throw that out there.
Sure. Yeah.
Just to throw people
off the scent.
The
yeah.
Ku Klux Klan, they have a Twitter account. Do they have a blue check mark? I mean, is this verified?
Oh, yeah, sure. Why not?
We know it's them.
Yes, of course.
What is it?
And you can't heart them anymore. I mean, you can't star them anymore. You have to heart them.
Again, a reason I will not be hearting that group. What is their, I wonder what their picture is up there. Just like a bed sheet with holes in it?
Yeah, I don't know.
It's odd.
This could be something on fire. It's hard to say.
Mm.
I haven't looked. I may look now just because you raised the question.
Well, I hope they all get outed. Terrible behavior.
All right, fine.
I suppose there's probably some good Ku Klux Klan members out there.
Do you hear the music, Chris?
Yes, I do.
That usually indicates that the program's just about over. In fact, it is almost over, and if you like what you heard today or if you dislike it, go ahead and click contact at philhewlettandfriends.com, or you can leave us a voicemail, you can leave us a Twitter at Faf Show. We're on Facebook as well. Why don't you heart us? Go ahead and do that. For our executive producer, Mike Stark, our production assistant, Ryan Hayden, who's here, for Chris and the friends, I'm Phil. Talk to you next time on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot. Available now at Walgreens.
I want to tell you about a spectacular dining experience. It's Portsacall Waterfront Dining, award-winning service and cuisine with a view of the dynamic L.A. Harbor from every seat. Enjoy daily sunset specials as well as the South Bay's best champagne brunch. The outdoor harborside patio is a perfect setting for happy hour every weekday from 3 to 8. Portsacall Waterfront Dining. For reservations and directions, visit portsacalldining.com or call 310-833-3553.